We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode number 26 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And we're here together to help you find some additional joy in your journey as we join up with another fierce female with an inspirational story. Joining us is a national service hero. So let's learn a little bit more about Kim Mitchell. She's the Senior Vice President for Military and Government Affairs at the National University System, and she leads the innovative efforts within this system for military veterans and military families pursuing their educational degree through outreach programs. Prior to her position at National University, she was President and CEO of Veterans Village of San Diego, where she led a robust team who serve over 3,000 veterans annually by providing veterans experiences, challenges post-service with residential treatment programs, mental health programs, and support services, things we all know are needed in our communities. You know, Kim is nationally recognized for leading. She's a vocal advocate for our service members, our veterans, our military families, and Gold Star families. She frequently speaks at nonprofit, community, and corporate conferences in communities across the country. Adopted during the Vietnam War from an orphanage in 1972, Kim is also recognized as an advocate for our Vietnam veterans and Vietnam era veterans. She was the official spokesperson for the Department of Defense 50-year Vietnam War Commemoration Committee for 3 years. Definitely want to look those up and hear more. And over the past 8 years, she has participated in events across the country recognizing and honoring the service of our Vietnam veterans. You know, she has quite a history that we're going to learn about during this podcast, but I'd like to just kind of give you some local context for some of the things she's doing at this time. You know, she serves on the board of directors for the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, the Woody Williams Foundation, the Infinite Hero Foundation, the Kaplan Public Service Foundation, and she sits on the advisory committee for Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America. She's appointed to the Department of Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee on Homeless Veterans, and she served as 2 years as a trustee on the board of the National University System as well. She is a 2019 George W. Bush Presidential Center Stand to Veterans Leadership Program Scholar, and she holds a bachelor's degree from United States Naval Academy in Ocean Engineering and a master's degree from George Washington University in Organizational Management. In April of 2021, Kim's portrait and story were highlighted in George Bush's book, Out of Many, One, Portraits of American Immigrants. Wow, Keisha, this is a rock star for today's episode.
Oh my goodness, I'm so glad that you are here with us, Kim. And we're so lucky to have you as one of our sheroes in education. You know, each week we explore models of leadership together. And we focus on what we refer to as a pattern of M, where we ask our guests who their role models are and how they've impacted their lives, and then considering the mentors that you've had, and then we're going to turn to what you see in the mirror and any movements and mavericks that you might have encountered.
And Keisha, don't forget, we want to watch for any edgy babble or acronyms or organizations we use. So I caught a few of them that I think we should definitely know a little bit more about as Kim invites us to this conversation. So Kim, I'm curious to know a little bit more about VVMF and the Woody Williams Foundation. Can you share more and welcome yourself to the show?
Well, first, thank you so much for inviting me to be here. Anytime I get a chance to advocate on behalf of our veterans and their families, especially representing a great organization like the National University System, it's certainly an honor to do so. So the two organizations that I'm a part of as far as on their board of directors that you mentioned, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund and the Woody Williams Foundation, are both organizations that are very, very near and dear to my heart. The Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund is actually the founders of the wall, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. And because I was born in Vietnam and I was adopted by a service member, an airman who was stationed at the airbase in Da Nang, I have a very, as you can imagine, personal connection to the Vietnam veterans. And to be able to see the wall and be a part of what it means, and to be able to see the over 58,000 names of patriots that never came home to their families, and to be able to see and recognize the Vietnam veterans that are still around the country, and those Vietnam era veterans and their families that never got the welcome home that they deserved 50 years ago, that I see myself as being part of their legacy. It is my job to do what I can to ensure that not only they and their families know that we thank and honor and recognize them and their service, but to ensure that future generations of service members and their families are never treated like they like the Vietnam veterans were. And that I think education is a big part of that, that education of history, that education of service and sacrifice. And the Woody Williams Foundation is very similar in the fact that Woody Williams is the last living Medal of Honor recipient from World War II. He received the medal for actions on Iwo Jima when he was a very, very young Marine back in 1945. In fact, it was February 1945. And he was a flamethrower. And so Woody had served, you know, from everything from before joining the Marine Corps when he was growing up on a farm in West Virginia and delivering the telegrams to families who had lost loved ones, and he would have to bring the telegram, and he could see the impact of losing a loved one is on their family. And then his service in the Marine Corps, his service on Iwo Jima, and knowing that two Marines died protecting him as he did his job that day, and then being awarded our nation's highest medal for valor and courage under fire. And his foundation, the Woody Williams Foundation, in which I'm a member of the board, is to educate our America, our communities, on the sacrifice of Gold Star families and what they did and the legacy of their loved ones. And what we do is we go around and we help communities establish Gold Star family memorial monuments across the nation, so that our Gold Star families and the communities have some place to gather to honor those lost in service to our country.
Oh my goodness, what an inspiration and what incredible work that you are involved in. I've only witnessed the Gold Star family, I'm going to call it a ritual, at airports where they're taking the special flights, and there's not a dry eye in the place. So I can't imagine how you do your work without crying every single day. It's just so honorable. Thank you so much for that. So now let's get started with our infamous M's: role models, mentors, mirror, and mavericks. Can you start by sharing with us who your role models are and why?
My role models are, because I'm a veteran and because I came from a military family, are all basically veteran and military. World War II veterans, because you know that is the greatest generation, right? If you can think of what this world would be like had they not stepped up to serve and been so courageous on the battlefield and at sea, right? Just to think of what our world would be like. Our Vietnam veterans are my personal heroes, and they're always going to be my role models. They're always going to be the ones that I look to even today, you know, as they're in their 70s, to be my mentors, to make sure that I'm on the right path in life to continue their legacy and their service in the communities and organizations. And then veterans who have paved the path, right? So there's a lot of female veterans that served in the service long before me. And they paved that path so that I could serve and that I could serve honorably. and that I could serve in the United States Navy, where I wouldn't have to be afraid to go to work and be able to do my job professionally and to be respected because of who I was and the job that I was doing, and not being discriminated against because I was a woman or because I was a woman of color, being Vietnamese. And so those are the people who I believe are my role models.
Continuing their legacy, for certain, we can hear through your voice and how you amplify voice. You know, we definitely hear the pattern of service, honor, and dignity in your role models. And we're curious, what are or who are some of the mentors that have guided you as you think about these important traits?
Well, I've had the very fortunate honor of being able to meet a lot of very influential leaders throughout my career who have guided me. And the senior leaders that I worked for, both in the Navy and nonprofit world that I've kind of found myself in. And I will tell you that while I was in the Navy, I never thought I would find myself in the nonprofit world or even being a public speaker. But just even when I joined the Navy, having an admiral who actually served in Vietnam and was a POW, you know, at Hanoi Hilton, take me under his wing and say, I will be your sea daddy. I will be your mentor as you go through your career in the Navy. And anything that you need to ask, you know, feel free to reach out and ask. And I think that's what a lot of us need, right? We need somebody. It doesn't mean that we don't have the motivation or the desire. But to be successful, sometimes you just need that person, that mentor, to take you under their wing and say, you can do it, but I'm here to help guide the way and accompany you on your journey if you need. And so, you know, having leaders like that or working for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff my last 2 years in the Navy, Admiral Mike Mullen, that you can't think of a better person to have as a mentor, because here he is very successful, being the number one presidential military advisor, right? So having that person as kind of a mentor and to see what he does and to see how he interacts with people and to see how his presence is when he gets up on stage, right? For me, I learned a lot just by watching him interact with families, watching him interact with communities, watching him as he got up on stage to talk about issues that were very important to our community, and talking about education and how education very much is what we see as the baseline for successful reintegration for our service members, our veterans, and our families. And then now in the nonprofit space, I've had the fortunate experience to be able to work for some really influential nonprofits. I worked for, I co-founded Dixon Center, which worked with Easter SEALs. Easter SEALs has been around for years. There's probably not a person around that hasn't heard of Easter SEALs in some way, shape, or form throughout the years. And just the amazing things that they do for people that just need a little bit more assistance than maybe some other people, right? Some of the underserved populations, people with disabilities, or we, you know, the abilities, right? There isn't a disability, it's abilities. It's but just a different level of abilities. And then getting to be able to lead a nonprofit that and be the president and CEO of a homeless veteran service provider in San Diego, right? As the first female, first non-combat Vietnam veteran CEO of that organization, and having those mentors guide me was just an amazing experience. And it's knowledge, like I said, of people who have taken me under their wing and guided me along the way.
Wow, what an incredible group of leaders you have been exposed to. I'm sure our audience, some of them are incredibly jealous right now. What an incredible privilege. Hey, but what point do you remember looking into the mirror and recognizing a leader looking back at you?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because I think leadership is something that happens when you start caring for a cause that's greater than yourself and caring for people that look to you to lead them to accomplish great things that they may not realize that they have the capability of accomplishing. And I don't, you know, going to the Naval Academy is to develop leaders, right? Both morally, mentally, and physically, to imbue them with the highest ideals of duty, honor, and loyalty, right? All the mission of the United States Naval Academy. But sometimes you don't realize you're a leader in your leadership ability, in your leadership capability, until someone in desperate need of guidance and leadership comes to you, and you are able to lead a group of people, and you lead a group of sailors, or to lead a staff, to be able to maybe add a new mission to an organization, or to lead a bunch of homeless veterans into being able to successfully make their way off the streets, you know, and dealing with their mental health and dealing with addiction. And so I think you have to be compassionate, right? Compassionate outreach is a key thing for leadership.
Yeah, well, you are definitely compassionate and passionate. I love what you said about leadership being about something that is greater than yourself. And one thing that you have absolutely done is exhibited that every single day in your actions and also in the legacy that you're building. And you have been in a lot of spaces that not a lot of women have been in. And so I'm curious to learn more about how do you see women changing the world, yourself included, of course?
Well, certainly in the military space, right, and in the veteran space, I believe that women are changing the mindsets, right? Because quite often when you think of the military, you think of this male-dominated, gung-ho, you know, running off, you know, to fight our nation's wars and just, you know, win the battles, right? But if you think about how long women have served, right, in some capacity for over a century, and to think of the contributions that they have made in the military, right? And that's changing the mindsets, right? And I think if you even look at the most recent events in our military where women have stepped up, you know, even in my class at the Naval Academy, we had female women combat pilots that were flying jets. We had, in 2015, there was the first couple women who completed Army Ranger School. And now you've got a female sailor who is the first special operator, right? Who completed SWIFT training, man the boats, right? Which is kind of a crazy term when we're, but that's what, you know, they are part of the crew now on boats delivering SEALs, Navy SEALs to shore, right? And the great thing is that the comment from like senior leaders after she qualified, a 37-week qualification to become a SWIC operator, was we welcome her to the community as part of our team. That right there, I mean, if that isn't changing mindsets, I don't know what is, because people have to see what we're capable of, recognize our professionalism, and recognize our potential for greatness. Not by anything that because we're a woman, we're not a woman, you know, we're white, we're Asian, we're Hispanic, whatever it might be.
You know, you bring up such a great point that there's a lot of women who have kind of moved into position, but they still had the fight of acceptance by the men who were among them. So the pivot point, as you just said, is when you move into a position and the men are like, oh, yeah, and they don't even think about it. So if that's it, I mean, if that's not changing the world, I don't know what is. Now, there's also, speaking of changing the world, a lot of female mavericks who are really just disrupting the system in all fields. Some of them launched into orbit last week. So who might you be watching that others need to be paying attention to?
Well, I believe, you know, the the women that I'm watching, I kind of already alluded to in some of my other questions, are the women who have broken those barriers for others to follow, right? Paving that path for others to follow, which I believe when given the chance and the opportunity, we'll do that. We'll do that. Don't tell us we can't. Give us the chance and we can. And just watching because I'm a veteran, I love watching women get the opportunity to do things that I didn't, but now that the environment has changed, that they're able to get to do. Because now there's going to be great opportunities for all those who follow to just keep making a difference, keep, you know, making this world a better place than how we found it.
Yeah, and to make it a better place and change these mindsets and pave these paths and, you know, stand in our truth, we also need to make sure we take care of ourselves. And Keisha and I are constantly contemplating the best way to engage in self-care. And I think one of the things we most look forward to also in unpacking these stories is how do these amazing women do it? So what do you do for self-care practices? You know, what's Kim's recipe for all of this?
Well, I have actually my roommate is a classmate of mine from the academy. And it's interesting, you know, after we met 29 years ago. So now, you know, we live in the same house together. And it's great because we'll make dinner together. We'll, you know, have a glass of wine together. You know, I have two dogs, as I mentioned at the beginning. I have two dogs that are laying here by my side. One's a 13-year-old yellow lab named Trouble, and he's my BFF. And then we have the little rascal who's 11 months old today, and she's a labradoodle puppy named Pinky. And so for me, just taking them out for a walk, right, and just looking at the trees, because we live, you know, in the kind of like in a wooded area in Maryland outside of Annapolis. And I've lived in downtown D.C. before. And so there's a difference between high intensity urban living in, you know, in downtown D.C. and now where every time we walk outside at night, you see a red fox run across the road. So to me, there's the just being able to just turn your computer off, put your cell phone away for a little bit, or even if you have your cell phone, don't look at your email, but listen to music and go for a walk or sit outside, light the fire pit. And I do like to travel. That's something that I haven't been able to do in the last really 2 years for fun. You know, I've gone on a couple work trips, but I do find travel a very relaxing thing because I love meeting new people.
And everybody, I think, is ready to travel, don't you? And a little vitamin in with nature, I don't think ever hurts anybody. And those are two things, Frances, that I can do for self-care. I can go on a nature walk, and I love to travel too. So Frances and I, Kim, often, I struggle with self-care. I'm just going to lay it out there. And so she's very healthy. She has incredible health routines. And I don't. So, but I can get into your health routines. And I appreciate you sharing them with our audience today. And now we're going to move to a little game of insights that we like to play to kind of finish off the podcast. And it's a finish this thought game. So here's the first one. An event that changed my world view.
September 11th, 2001. I think it was that moment that at least what I saw was people were able to come together because they realized that for our servicemen and women who would deploy, you know, it was always to another world over there. But September 11th, right, that war came home and it affected a lot of lives. And I saw togetherness right after 9/11. Of people reaching out to do things for other people they've never met, that compassion, that compassionate outreach. And I know it's there, and I want to see it again. I want to see that compassionate outreach to one another.
Definitely. I don't think any of us who were around at that time can ever forget that moment and that morning for many of us. And the compassion, like you said, that really brought us together. You know, I have some of those sentence starters too, and I think the pattern may continue. I'm curious, finish this thought for us. I became a stronger person after.
When I was told I couldn't do something, the bricks were laid out to where everyone thought I would fail. But I wasn't going to fail, and I wasn't going to quit. And so you got to figure out what are your options by surrounding yourself with great people who you trust, who can give you the information you need as a leader to make the decision you need to make in the best interest of the organization. And so, you know, it's, I think, obviously in the nonprofit space, it's a tough time to be a nonprofit organization. Especially when you survive on philanthropic donations and giving and things like that, and in a time where everyone is watching every dollar already. And so having to do things in an organization that people just like, nope, it's not going to happen. You're losing money. Organization's going to have to, you know, close its doors and end your mission. And I'm like, nope, let's figure out a way. What do we got to streamline operations. We got to bring in more money. Everyone has to do a little bit more. If we've go as far as you can and then do a little bit more.
Absolutely. That's an inspiration to a lot of nonprofits. What about this one? My life improved when I
realized that I can be happy if I follow my heart in doing the things that I want to do, vice the things that I feel like everybody else wants me to do. Right? I enjoy and I'm happy when I'm working with veterans and when I see them smile for the first time in a long time, when I see them realize that people are grateful for their service and they weren't, they were ashamed of it, right? And obviously I'm talking about our Vietnam veterans. Having them come up to me and hug me and cry on my shoulder as a realization that something good resulted from their service is everything to me.
It's speaking deep to my soul about you being unapologetic about leading with heart. You know, every day I ask people, what made you smile today? And now I think I might flip that and say, you know, who did you smile at today? You know, how did you make that impact with them? I like that happy space. So here's another one, a decision that changed your life.
I've made a lot of decisions that's changed my life.
You sure?
The decision that really changed my life, though, was making the decision to move from Washington, D.C. to San Diego to take over VVSD. I mean, if you think about Veterans Village of San Diego and to... the fact that I'm not a social worker, I'm not a case manager, I'm not an AOD certified counselor, right? I'm a Mark 1 Mod 0 veteran. And here I was, you know, driving out to California to take over a homeless veteran service provider. And then the other decision that I made that equally changed my life is making the decision to leave that to come to National University to lead their military and veterans programs, because it's a place where I can do more, because it's nationwide. It's not just in San Diego. It's not just for the veterans in San Diego. It's for veterans and military families across the nation and for all services. And I, you know, for me, and I'm not a PhD, if you probably saw on my on my resume and my bio. But here I am, a leader in a university system. But I believe that everybody has the potential to achieve their dreams, if supported by the right people and supported by the right opportunity. And I believe National University, and that's why I came to National University. I believe National University has the ability to be able to meet people who don't have an opportunity to go to college other ways, right? Not the traditional brick and mortar. I went to the Naval Academy. I went to GW. But a lot of people don't have that opportunity. A lot of people, maybe they transition from the service and they're already married, they already have children, they have a job, but they need an education, so they need an opportunity to go to school that can meet their schedule on a time when they can do their classes.
You know, Kim, you have highlighted over and over and over, whether it's been print about you or the voice that we've been able to share today, that you are a leader among leaders. And we cannot thank you enough for the perspective that's helping us with some mind shifts, the unconditional service and love, and the action that you take. It truly is a story of full circle leadership about doing more and giving more and being present with more so that others can really amplify the opportunities in their life, whether it be through education, through service, or perhaps the combination of both and more. You know, I have learned so much from your story, and I also loved reading about your story out of many one Portraits of America's Immigrants, and seeing your image and how your service and your way of being can be a model for each and every one of us. You know, I always love to also put Keisha on the spot when I share my learning. So I make sure she takes good notes because we're educators here. So Keisha, you know, I've shared a little bit about what I'm learning, and you know, I adore Kim. So what have you been learning about Kim in this conversation?
Well, very similar things. I think to highlight that you come from a country that you can continue to give back to through your service to the veterans who served in that event, and just being adopted by a service person and taking on a life of service yourself. My grandfather was a World War II veteran, and he had three daughters, and none of them were able to go into the military. So two of them married into it because I do feel like it's a heart tug. It's like, you know, it's like teachers. We're generations of educators. You're generations of service, men and women. And, you know, I know he was so happy when he saw women be able to have a deeper footprint he was in the Navy, as a matter of fact. And in the Navy, because he, you know, he could have never imagined his daughters having that opportunity. I think it's incredible that your admiral was a POW and you had the opportunity to learn under him. And as your sea daddy, I think that was probably a gift that keeps on giving you. And there's probably times that you're making decisions and you recall things that he shared with you, and you probably make a decision from that place without even thinking about it. I loved what you said about leadership being something that happens when you start caring for a cause greater than yourself. Because I know in a lot of times, sometimes we ask this question and people can, they're like December 3rd, 19, whatever. And other people we just became leaders because we love something. And I kind of think they're the better leaders because you're leading with heart and with a servant's mindset, which is exactly what you do, especially in the nonprofit space. And I'm just so thankful for your creative problem solving in that space to make sure that the organizations you represent can thrive, even when the economy is hit so hard with things like a global pandemic and just the fingerprints that you're leaving all over this country, obviously are what you were recognized for in George Bush's book, but also what you represent, period. just you're such an incredible giving heart and giving back heart. And we're going to give you an honorary PhD from Tech and Learning University, if you'll accept that.
Oh, thank you so much.
We'll send you the certificate in the mail.
It will get framed and put on my wall.
Excellent. Kim, do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with our audience? Maybe something you might tell your younger self or your sheroes?
I would say that if there's something that you really want to do in life, right? Figure out a way to make it happen, right? If there's people that surround yourself with good people, remember three things: people, places, things, right? The right people, the right places, doing the right things. And you can achieve everything that you set for yourself. And don't ever let someone say that you can't based on who you are, what sex you are, what nationality you are. Well, you know, I'm 5'2", so they can tell me I can't dunk a basketball, and I'll agree with them on that. But I will tell you, I've achieved a lot in my life that I never, ever thought that I would have ever been able to achieve.
Well said. You know, we want to thank you again, Kim. And of course, I want to thank my partner, Keisha. You know, we started with using the M's to guide us, but it sounds like we're going to use the letter P to help us continue reflecting. You know, our listeners are constantly in that space of learning and reflecting, and you have definitely paved a path for us to think about some new ways to do that work. And I'm going to think deeply today about who am I going to take under my wings. You've definitely had a message of how important that is. And, you know, Keisha, I have one of those coaching questions, you know, because we want to keep this reflection going. And so today's coaching question in honor of Kim Mitchell is, how might you live a life of service in your learning community, your nation, and in the global community? Again, how might you live a life of service in your learning community, nation, and global community?
Oh, that's a great, great coaching question. And I can't wait to see the responses that our audience members offer on Twitter. You know, we can't thank you enough, Kim, for joining us here today and spending a little bit of time with us and sharing just the footprint that you've left, especially on the military. And the work that you're doing with the veterans is admirable. And we really appreciate you for all of that. To our audience, please join us for our next podcast, where we're going to highlight another shero in education and explore their M's. And don't forget to follow us on our hashtag TL Honor Roll, ROLE, and respond to the coaching question that Frances just shared. And until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, ROLE.